This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international programme of the non-profit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is Robert Picardo, the emergency medical hologram from Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To The Journey. I'm your co-host, Suzanne Williamson, and with me, as always, are...
Kay Shaw.
And...
Zachary Fruling.
Well, today we're going to be discussing something a little bit different. I know Kay has brought up before that sometimes she hears from people, season 5 through 7 is all The Doctor and Seven. Nobody else. It's pretty much The Doctor and Seven show.
The Doctor Seven show. Mm-hmm.
So what we've done is each taken a look at episodes from season 5 through 7 and come up with some alternatives, showing that there's not just The Doctor and Seven. There are other characters on that ship.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's some great episodes in here, actually. I was really surprised. Like, I knew this was the case. But when I tried to come up with a list, I came up with quite a long list, actually. So I'm quite pleased with that.
So this is a very specific topic. Mm-hmm. We have the non-Doctor 7 episodes from seasons 5 through 7.
Yes.
I came up with 12.
We do.
I'm not going to tell y'all 12, but I came up with 12.
Why season 5 and not season 4 when we came up with this topic?
Well, because I think season 4 is largely 7, to be honest, but...
I just thought it was interesting that season 4 was excluded from the idea of this episode.
Yeah, we could have put season 4 in there, but then we talked about season 4 a few weeks ago, so...
That's true. There are 2 Chakotay episodes in season 4.
Yes, and we did talk about season 4 fairly recently. That was probably more the reason why.
So we're covering new ground.
We're covering new ground, yes. Who wants to start, then? Who wants to throw out the first one?
I shall throw out the gauntlet, as it were. Season 5, I am going to go with 1159.
Yay.
And it's not just because I'm drinking a Zima right now.
Oh, I'm so glad you chose that, because I didn't. Yeah, this is for real. Suzanne is actually drinking a Zima right now, which is straight up from the 90s.
I am. It's awesome.
Circa 1994.
Yeah. Have you actually time traveled whilst drinking that Zima?
I think I might have, but this Zima is not from the past. I did not buy it back in the 90s and keep it, you know, in a wine cellar until now.
I thought I was detecting some temporal flux on the recording.
Suzanne, thanks to you now, in my headcanon is the fact that Captain Janeway's ancestor was drinking a Zima at the turn of the millennium when she was working on the Millennium Gate.
Exactly. When she was scared about Y2K. No!
Oh, the millennium bug. Yes. I love 1159. Actually, what I ended up doing was I ended up with a list, bizarrely, of 20 episodes, which seems like quite a lot, but I whittled it down to 4.
Whittle.
Mostly by going, what off this list do I actually want to watch? And 1159 was one of them.
I love that episode mainly because of the ancestry genealogy connection. I'm kind of an amateur genealogist / ancestry person, and I just get a kick out of researching my ancestors and learning as much as I can about them and collecting their artifacts and stories and photographs. And this episode makes me so happy for that reason. It's a big part of my identity. So I totally relate to this episode.
Well, I just like it because Captain Janeway has all these grandiose ideas about our ancestors that turns out to be wrong. And I don't know why. I just really like that. Yeah. It's like, oh,
it's like with every subsequent generation, the story would get blown out of proportion a little
bit.
Yeah, that is really funny. It's very amusing when we see the reality of it, isn't it?
And then Neelix just bursts her bubble. Blow. Oh, was it Neelix? No. Darn it, it was Seven, wasn't it, that bursts her bubble?
Yeah.
Darn that Seven.
Wait, this is supposed to be a non-Seven episode.
Well, we're cutting her out of there. Neelix gives her the photograph. So, there. Neelix, photograph.
Yeah. I just really like getting to see Kate kind of play a totally different character. And I love how she's like a completely different character straight away. And she's totally unrecognizable. I love it. It's great. I really enjoy that. And I know there's a lot of like talk that's been had about the fact that in Star Trek, there's this tendency to get the same actor to play the ancestor and how it's ridiculous.
Oh, it is ridiculous.
But I actually kind of...
Okay, no, it's not so ridiculous. I'm going to go personal here.
Okay.
I look a lot like my grandfather. You can take two pictures of us side by side, especially when we were younger, and you can put them side by side and we look identical. It's not...
Well, wait a minute, Zach. Did you actually go back in time and you are your grandfather like Fry did in Futurama?
Yeah.
I knew it.
Did you even have to ask?
There you go. There's a lot of temporal weirdness going on this episode. I just like seeing Kate kind of playing somebody different. And I like the fact that they just come up with this totally random story. Like, it's really out there. Like, it's not the kind of thing that you just randomly come up with. I don't really know where this came from.
Yeah, how did they come up with this idea?
Yeah, I just kind of find it really interesting. Do we know who wrote this episode?
Brannon Braga and Joe Manosky.
See, it goes in the category of Brannon Braga's weird stuff. Yeah.
And Joe Manosky's written some really, as we know, great episodes, because didn't he write Darmok and things like that?
I believe so, yeah.
Did you also know that one of Captain Janeway's other ancestors was named Garnet McGee, and she lived in Dallas and had a little thing with J.R. Ewing?
Who didn't have a little thing with J.R. Ewing? Seriously.
Just saying.
Is this a Dallas reference that I'm not going to get?
It was a Dallas reference.
It is.
Okay, just checking. I have to say, I did see some of the stuff that Kate did in Ryan's Hope, so I have seen some of that.
I was a different ancestor.
Yeah. What's her name in Ryan's Hope?
I don't know. I never
something
watched
Ryan. Mary Ryan.
Something Ryan, yeah.
Was it Mary
Well,
Ryan?
Everybody's called something Ryan in Ryan's Hope.
I think it was Mary Ryan.
Literally, like, half the cast are called something Ryan.
I know.
Is it Mary? Is it Mary
so.
Ryan?
I want to say yes.
Yeah, I think it is.
Does Meg Ryan make an appearance?
But
I
don't
know. Yeah, no.
I love getting to see this character, though. Like, she's such a cool character. I really like Shannon O'Donnell.
She is fun. She's totally not Captain Janeway at all.
No, not at all.
No, Henry Janeway is more Captain Janeway.
Straight away they introduce that at the beginning with the fact that she's just like totally ditzy and then she like crashes into someone.
The backseat of her car is a mess and yeah.
I like that she gets Henry Janeway out of his shell. He's really in his own isolated world and he really needs that walnut shell cracked.
Yeah. It's interesting though, isn't it? Because she's kind of like, oh yeah, that's the ancestor or whatever. But it's like Henry Janeway. He's the Janeway.
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of almost see that, like, she's ended up being a mixture of the two of them.
Well, she gets the Dante love from Henry.
Yeah, that is true.
And the Fairhaven love from Shannon, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so we've covered 1159. Zachary, what is one of your picks from season 5?
I have to go with one of my favorite Voyager episodes of all time, which is Timeless.
Hey.
Nice.
We're going to have a short show tonight because I think we're going to overlap on everything.
Probably.
It's hard for me to really say what I like about Timeless. I kind of put myself in Harry Kim's shoes, you know, having caused this disaster and the death of all of his friends and having the chance to go back and rewrite history. I mean, how many of us would love to rewrite something in history? Like, we don't have the ability to do that. But if we could, it would be amazing. And it's kind of fun just to follow this little thought experiment. What if you could reset, you know, hit the reset button from future Harry Kim's standpoint and make something in the past better? We'd all love to do that, wouldn't we? Mm-hmm. So I just like the episode for that reason alone. And this is actually my go-to episode if I want to introduce people to Voyager, by the way.
Mm. Oh.
Yeah, I think you can learn a lot about the meaningfulness of Voyager. Even though it's not really an ensemble cast in this episode, I think you can get the vibe of Voyager from this show.
See, aside from the fact that I love like the time wobble nature of it, because I always love time wobble type episodes where we like mess around with that kind of stuff. I just love that in Star Trek. But aside from that, I would say there are two things that are amazing about Timeless. One, Chakotay rocks the salt and pepper hair.
Yes, salt and pepper hair is back.
And secondly, Harry finally grows a pair.
It's about time.
But then he starts to lose it. He's like, I killed them. I'm going to do it again. I'm killing them all over again.
Yeah, that is true. He does lose it a bit at one point. But I like getting to see an older Harry who's gotten a bit more, you know, he's started to take responsibility a bit more and he's started to be a bit more like an adult.
Well, he's willing to break the rules. I like that. For what he believes in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I find this really interesting parallel with Endgame, actually. That's something that I've thought about before.
We're never supposed to speak of that.
Yeah, but we can say it. I'm not going to talk about it in reference to this episode, but we can reference it. You know, I mean, in terms of what Admiral Janeway does versus this, I mean, there are definite parallels there.
Truth.
Admiral Janeway gets a lot of criticism from people for what she does, but I don't see Chakotay and Harry getting a lot of criticism for this episode.
I only criticize her because she doesn't go back far enough to save Joe Carey.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm not necessarily saying from us, but I mean, generally speaking, she gets a lot of criticism for what she does.
Oh, yeah.
In Endgame. And I don't hear that about Harry and Chakotay in this episode. And yet I see it as practically the same thing.
It is the same thing.
Yeah.
Except they're saving more people. She was just saving, you know, a couple of folks. Except for Joe Carey.
Yeah. Getting them home faster to save a bunch of people and to change what happened with stuff. But they're saving everyone, basically.
Yeah.
I love the message from future Harry Kim to present time Harry Kim at the end of the episode. That brings a little tear to my eye every time. I don't cry much about Voyager, but that'll bring a tear to my eye.
And we can't forget an amazing part of this episode. Captain Geordi LaForge.
Yes.
Yes.
Come on, he directed the episode and he was like, hey, I'm going to be in this too.
Yeah. Gets his nice little cameo.
That's right.
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? Because Timeless has always been one of my favourites, but like you say, when you start trying to nail down why you like it so much, it's a tricky one, isn't it? But there's just something really compelling about it. I don't think I ever really get bored of rewatching it.
I mean, most Star Trek episodes are things like, okay, we run into an anomaly or we've got some ethical dilemma to solve. You don't get to see the destruction of a starship very much. And that is cool every time they do that. There's just a cool factor to it that I love.
And then seeing it frozen under...
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, it's creepy. And then seeing frozen Captain Janeway makes me cry.
And the crew's been there for 20 years, right? That's amazing.
Yeah. I just love that shot where you see it bouncing across the snow.
Yeah.
That shot is amazing.
I don't think they are emoting nearly enough, though, when they're walking around all their dead former crewmates. Chakotay is starting to lose it a little bit, but Harry Kim's a little, you know, they keep their cool too much.
Well, it's been, like, years.
They're Starfleet.
That's true, I guess. And maybe it's, you know, it's been a long time, so they're not over it. They're clearly not over it, but...
No, but like you say, it's been a long time. And yeah, seeing it as opposed to just imagining it in your head is way harder. But then they've got this plan to fix it, haven't they? So
yeah.
If they were seeing it without a plan to fix it, I think it would be different.
Chakotay kind of makes this offhand remark that it's not a happy reunion. And that's about the most emotion you get out of it.
Yeah, although you kind of wonder whether or not they've gotten both of them a bit numb to it over the years.
Definitely part of Chakotay has died.
Especially because they're so focused on trying to fix it. And as we've seen in Star Trek over the years, they can put aside all the grief and all of that whilst they're trying to actually sort out the problem. So I think it's more the focus of that.
Because this is something they've only imagined, right? They weren't there to see what happened, right? This has been all in their heads until they actually enter Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
And I just particularly like the fact that it's Chakotay and Harry that we get. And I like the fact that we get to see them have a relationship that we don't normally see. And the fact that they're two characters that tend to get pushed to the back burner quite a lot.
So you never see them
I just
together.
Like the fact that they become the focus of the episode. And the two of them together is an interesting dynamic we don't see very much.
It is an odd pairing. I wonder why they chose those two characters in particular. Because there are other odd pairings you could have chose. Why those two for this episode?
Yeah, well, exactly. That's the thing, isn't it? So in a lot of ways, it makes sense that it would have been Tom, but they didn't pick Tom. And
what if it were B'Elanna and Neelix?
Oh, gosh.
Let's not think about that.
What a pair. B'Elanna would have killed Neelix by then.
She would have killed him years ago. Yeah. I love the fact that we both just came up with that at the same time. She would have killed him years ago, like a year after it happened. She would have just killed him.
Definitely.
Or like Tom and Tuvok. I would like to see that version of that episode with Tom and Tuvok.
Then it never would have happened because Tuvok would not do it.
No, he would totally justify it to himself. He would use his logical brain and he would do what Vulcans always do, which is justify what they already believe in the name of logic.
You hear a lot of people saying this episode's a favorite, so I think it's definitely a legit choice. And even though we get a little bit of a funny Seven and the Doctor moment at the beginning of this episode, we don't really see them very much. So,
well, it's not an ensemble episode at all, really. It really is the Harry Kim and Chakotay show, and you know, with some other ancillary characters and some stuff at the beginning. But it's not an ensemble cast in this episode. That's why it kind of stands out, because it does capture the emotion of Voyager without much interaction from the rest of the crew. I think that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we get like flashback bits and stuff, don't we? So we do get bits of the rest of the cast, but the focus is definitely on Chakotay and Harry and what they're doing.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just really, really nice to get an episode with two very underused characters getting to have their moment in the spotlight. So, and I think they both shine in this episode. It's great to see. It is really great to see that grown-up Harry, because he is very different. Apart from his little breakdown moment.
Yes, that's about the only Harry that I like, because he's darker and edgier and kind of moody.
It's a little
He's
jaded.
Not whining all the time, which is a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, he has his breakdown moment, and that's obviously what's been going on in his head, but for most of the episode, we see this, I'm going to sort this, I'm going to take the responsibility, I'm going to fix the mistake that I made.
Yeah.
So it is great to see that. Well, those were both on my lists.
Do you have any others from season five?
From season five? Well, I think my season five pick, other than those two, would be Counterpoint.
Same here.
I love that episode. And I think I've heard Kate say that this is her favorite episode. She's a big fan of this one.
Well, she gets to kiss someone other than a hologram, so yeah.
There's also so much nuance in it, like...
Oh, yeah.
It's just clever, and, like, it's intellectual, and it's...
Yeah, and you get to see equals, intellectual equals, sparring with each other.
Yeah.
And just the reveal at the end where she's played him is... awesome.
Yeah, like you just get this whole like who's playing who, like, well, they're both playing each other kind of all the way through, and it's like who's gonna get the upper hand and all the rest of it. Oh.
And they both know it, and that's what makes it really interesting to me.
I still think she surprises him at the end, though. I think
definitely. Yeah.
He thinks got it over on her at the end.
Oh yeah, he was arrogant.
She's one step ahead of him all of the time. But I just love it. Like, I don't know why, like, having watched a lot more Deep Space Nine since I watched this for the first time, it just makes me think, like, of, like, some of the relationships with some of the Cardassian characters. Like, I think Kashyyyk just makes me think of Dukat a bit, like, the way that he is, like, how manipulative he is, and, like, the sort of...
Completely.
He can be so charming, and then he can get what he wants by just putting people into the right place and everything, but I just... I love how intellectual this episode is, and how like they're just these equals that kind of face off against each other, but you never really get the sense of exactly how they feel about each other, whether there's any real feelings there, or whether it's all just manipulation, or whether it's a combination of the two. It's just beautifully played out.
There's at least some sort of intellectual respect, even if they don't really trust each other. But we do learn that even bad people like classical music, so...
And by that point, it's really classical music.
Yes, very classical music. What is this, an episode of TNG?
Well, yeah, exactly. The expression on Captain Janeway's face when she kisses him like in the shuttle bay and then he leaves. It's just kind of like, there's this expression on her face and there's so much you can read into that. Like, she just has this feeling like it's almost wistful, kind of like, oh, if circumstances were different, like I could totally fall for this guy, but...
But if circumstances were different, she would have already fallen for Chakotay, so...
That's true. Well, she has already fallen for Chakotay, but that's...
That's true. But I love when Kashyyyk is just sitting in her chair. Because, I mean, you just don't do that. That's like... that's declaring war, and that's where he went wrong.
Sitting in the chair is where he went wrong.
Yes.
Yeah.
Out of the chair.
The thing that I like the most about this episode is that most of the time when we see all these other characters and alien races and stuff showing up in Voyager, they can be like helpful or they can be an adversary or whatever, but there's always this sense that Voyager's always in control of the situation and like one step ahead of everything. And yet in this episode, that kind of goes, yes, Janeway gets the upper hand at the end, but there's just this sense that like she's grappling with this guy trying to like, he's her intellectual equal in the way that not many characters that we see in Voyager or not many antagonists that we see in Voyager are.
Almost so, no one, right.
Yeah. Exactly. So I really like to see that. I really love the fact that there's this idea that there's this guy who's just can stand up to her on an intellectual basis. So I just, yeah, it's a great episode. It really is. And again, a very compelling watch. It's just one that's, you go back to it and you don't really get bored of it. There's always new little bits to find in it every time you watch it.
It's got to be tough to be Captain Janeway because you don't encounter an equal very often. That's got to be a tough situation to be in. It's annoying, probably, right?
It's really got to be tough to be Prax. That poor guy.
Yes.
Constantly being yelled at. Prax!
He's like, I hate my job.
It's like, can I change my name? You just see him, like, internally eye roll each time his name is yelled, like, oh, God, what now?
Not again. Yeah, he's the quintessential lackey, isn't he?
You know who he reminds me of? I'm going to mix franchises here. He reminds me of TV's Frank in Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yeah, no idea.
You haven't seen this? You Mystery Science Theater 3000 fans out there know what I'm talking about. Prax, Prax is TV's Frank, one of the mad scientists.
Okay.
But like the sidekick one, not the sidekick. Not the smart one. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so we covered season five. Or are you still speaking about it?
Well, I was just going to add that, you know, I mean, the race of the D'Vor really, on the face of it, are quite one-dimensional in the way that we see one-dimensional races earlier on in Voyager. But they just, through this character, managed to make something more out of it. Because really, all we know about them is they hate telepaths and they're really xenophobic. But he just manages to make it into something so much more interesting. And I just think, yeah, the casting of this guy is great and the writing of him. So I just like the fact that we get a really 3D kind of interesting antagonist who feels very real. So thumbs up for Counterpoint.
I love that Kirsten Beyer has picked him up in the books.
Yes.
And done such a lovely job with him. Yay.
Mm-hmm. Write the book, Zachary.
Read the books, definitely.
Okay.
So that was season five. Let's move on to season six. And I'm not going first this time. Kay's going first.
No, I'll go first. I'm going to go first because I'm going to give Kay a nod for this one. Kay, this is more stuff you like. This is wobbly time stuff. I like Blink of an Eye.
Blink of an Eye is very cool.
That was not on my list.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I love Blink of an Eye. It's so interesting.
Is Blink of an Eye not kind of a Doctor episode, though?
Only because he goes down to the planet, but only for, like, 5 minutes.
I guess I didn't put it on my list because I thought of it more as a bit of a Doctor episode, but I guess, like you say, it's probably not so much. But he does feature in it a bit.
He does. He has a family. He has a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not a Doctor episode. It's not like it's not a Doctor episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, not at all.
I kind of tended to just try and pick stuff where they weren't really the focus at all, but it works. It's a great episode.
I think there's a theme for me. I like the episodes that cast Voyager in a meaningful light. And we get to see Voyager kind of from a third-person standpoint. This alien culture that where time moves at a different rate. And they build this whole mythology around the meaningfulness of Voyager. And Voyager means something deep to this world in a way that they just don't understand because it takes place literally in the blink of an eye for them. But the meaningfulness of Voyager for this culture I find very interesting.
Yeah,
the way they turn it into mythology and art and culture, and that's what civilizations do.
Yeah, and it's interesting in this episode how we get to see like a culture develop from practically nothing all the way through. Like that's just so cool and interesting to see that whole progression.
Because that's what civilization is. Yeah. You know, our civilization has gone through all those stages, and it's still heading into the future. And you can look at time on this grander scale than we tend to look at it. And I love that this episode takes that step back and looks at culture, not just in a little sliver of time when you first encounter the culture, but thousands of years of culture all compressed into a single episode. That's fascinating to me.
And it has Daniel Day-Kim, so you can't.
Yes,
not
so that's a plus. That's a definite plus.
Because he's amazing. Yeah, it's a great episode. I really like it.
Does anyone collect the Sky People action figures?
I wish I did. They'd be worth a lot.
I don't think they're that easy to get hold of outside of that planet, but...
And by the time you put in an order for them, they're already out of stock.
Yes. Order fast.
But I do support, like, the Lakesiders or whatever the heck they were called.
Lakeside, obviously.
Lakeside, yeah. It was Lakeside, wasn't it?
I think it was Lakeside.
I think so. Yeah.
There's nothing in particular that I like about it. I just like that it's a meaningful episode. Like, Voyager means something to these people in a way that's deep and part of their culture and ingrained. Just like for us, Star Trek is a part of our culture, right? It's deep and meaningful to us. And I think this is an episode that kind of puts the mirror back at Star Trek fans a little bit and says, look what this thing can mean. It can mean something really important to civilization.
Yeah.
And I like that, and that's all.
Nothing else. And that's all I have to say about
that's
that.
That's fair enough.
That's all I have to say about that. Nothing deep. I just think it's, you know, a neat idea.
It doesn't need to be deep.
Do you know what? I'm going to pick out Barge of the Dead. I think that episode deserves a mention.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's one that doesn't tend to come up a lot, but we've talked about it a couple of times onto the journey, and I like it a lot more than I thought I did. In the times that we've kind of rewatched bits of it, it's actually quite an interesting episode. And generally speaking, I'm very underwhelmed by the whole Klingon thing because it's all a bit meh. But this is kind of interesting. I like what they add in here on the Klingon mythos and stuff.
I'm the exact opposite. I love the Klingon stuff, and I am bored to tears by this episode.
Really?
Really.
That's
it does not
interesting.
Work for me at all. And I love Klingon stuff.
I really love the guest star, Eric Pierpoint. He's amazing. Mm. I loved him in Alien Nation. Yeah. And he plays a perfect Klingon. Like, everything that you would think a Klingon to be, he nails it.
I think I just don't like the silly mashup of Klingon culture and our own mythology. Like, why do Klingons need a river Styx? I just don't get it.
It makes sense. It works for me. I think it fits well with, like, everything that we know about Klingons.
But don't Klingons appropriate a lot of Terran culture? Like, you haven't read Shakespeare until you've read him in the original Klingon.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, which is, I mean, the Nazis used to claim that kind of stuff, right? Oh, Shakespeare was really a German. It's like, what?
So I can totally see the Klingons having a river Styx because they appropriate things and work them into their mythos.
Or they claim ownership of them.
Yes.
We came up with that, right? Yeah. Like the Russians do.
Yeah.
So Klingons are Russians.
Yeah, absolutely. Like Chekhov in the original series. Oh, that's a Russian invention, right? Yes. Klingons are Chekhov. Exactly.
Klingons are Chekhov.
Klingons are Chekhov.
Fair.
That's a Cold War thing, right? You know, the Russians invented that. Sure.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Definitely. Yeah, that is definitely a thing.
That's what you're getting at.
But I love the ambiguity that we get in this episode in the same way that I love the ambiguity we get in Sacred Ground where we see Janeway go on this spiritual quest, if you like. Mm-hmm. We just don't really ever get the answer about what's really going on. Is it just B'Elanna and all this hallucination stuff, or is there something a bit more to it? It's just, I like that, and I like to see her getting a bit more in touch with her Klingon side and getting a bit more of an appreciation for that. I'm feeling closer to a mum who's somebody who she's had a difficult relationship with, and mm-hmm. And it's different. It's an out there episode that's just different from what we normally see. And I like the fact that we get a nice B'Elanna focused episode that delves into a bit more of Klingon mythos. So that's why I enjoy it.
I do like it for all those reasons. It's an important B'Elanna episode. You're absolutely right. And it's good for all the reasons you mentioned. I just don't happen to enjoy it very much. But
that's fair.
Yeah.
I don't generally enjoy most Klingon episodes. Like, I find most of the sort of who's going to be the head of the council, let's have an argument about it and or stab each other just a bit tedious. Because, I mean, basically that is a lot of what goes on with them, isn't it?
Well, that and all the women have the boob window in their uniform.
That is true. Well, I don't boob mind window. That. That's fine. I'm down.
that is a plus. Boob window is a plus.
Boob windows are a plus, yeah. I don't think B'Elanna gets a boob window in this episode, does she? Which is quite disappointing.
And the episode's the poorer.
No,
for
I'm
it.
Pretty. Doesn't she have like cleavage going on? I think. I thought she did.
Oh, maybe. Well, I may have to rewatch it.
So I totally understand your perspective on this episode. I know a lot of people like it. I know it's an important Bond episode. It just doesn't really work for me. It wouldn't be on my list as a great episode from the season, but.
That's fair. I mean, I probably wouldn't have picked it a year ago, but since we've talked about B'Elanna and various other things that have made me rewatch the episode over the last year, I've come to appreciate it more than I thought I did.
But I have one on my list that I know you guys don't like.
What?
Oh, gosh. It doesn't begin with an F, does it?
Dragon's Teeth.
Oh, God.
No, it begins with a D. Dragon's Teeth.
Oh, that's okay.
See, that's what I'm saying. I know Suzanne goes, oh, not Dragon's Teeth.
It's better than episodes beginning with F. Let's just not even go there.
I know. I'm totally the minority. Most people don't seem to like Dragon's Teeth.
And I don't dislike it. I think there's interesting stuff in it, but it's not a memorable episode for me.
But now that I'm going through these episodes, there's a theme here, right? This is another instance of an episode where we look at culture on a grander scale besides just a little window. We have this chance to resurrect a culture, and I like the grandiosity of it that more than anything else.
You're so meta. You should do a show called, like, Meta Treks or something.
Yeah, there might be an idea for a show there.
I think that's an opening.
I'm so meta tonight.
You are very meta.
Well, tonight. We did do an episode on Dragon's Teeth where we talked about
a lot of
this.
We did do an episode on Dragon's Teeth, yes. I wonder whose idea that was.
I was the only person who was willing to defend the episode.
I don't know. I think I gave it a fair hearing.
You were like, it's okay.
Panic.
I gave it some stuff. I watched it.
Okay, well, I do have one more from season 6, though.
You
actually
watched it. You can't do more than that.
That's right. Yeah. I have one from season 6.
Well, throw it out there.
Riddles! Come on!
That's on my list, too. Yes. That's the one I'm talking about.
I had Riddles on my long list.
I love
Tuvok
Riddles.
Not being Tuvok, but still being Tuvok.
Yeah.
And Neelix being his buddy, taking care of him.
The Tuvok-Neelix relationship is great, and I always like when we get to see that come out. Because they're just so different.
They are different, but I just enjoy Tuvok actually finds somewhere else to be in the crew when he's not Tuvok. Mm-hmm. He finds something to do, and it's helpful. He makes really good food. So he should have taken over for Neelix and taken over the mess hall.
He bakes. Tuvok bakes.
It's just so fun to see what a Vulcan becomes when he loses his logic.
It is. And I mean, I think it's well done. There is a little bit of this whole criticism of Vulcans in the episode, which is something that we've talked about before that annoys me. But I think generally speaking, it's done fairly well without jumping on top of that too much. It's more about when there's this going back idea that...
I would like to have seen Tuvok keep a little more of his hobbies that he picked up during this episode in later seasons. I would like to see him bake a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's logical to bake.
Make cakes for people's birthdays.
I know logical people who like to bake.
But he'd bake the most perfect stuff, wouldn't he?
There's nothing wrong with that.
Measured with a set square and all this type of thing.
There's nothing wrong with baking logically.
Every single ingredient would be measured to
Well, when you bake,
a very narrow tolerance
range,
yeah.
It should be precise. Because baking isn't cooking. Baking has to be precise.
Yeah, but what I mean is to a point where it's just ridiculous. .00001 of a whatever.
Tuvok could be the kind of guy who would use the self-rising flour because all the ingredients are already in there and with perfect precision.
I don't think he would trust the self-rising flour.
Nah, he'd be a purist.
Especially if Neelix has been near the self-rising flour.
Don't trust the self-rising flour.
It would have Talaxian spice in it.
What is it with Tuvok in a way? Because there's a logical component to having fun. It decompresses you. It makes you have a better day. It puts everything in perspective. What is his beef against having fun?
Vulcans do not have fun.
It's logical to have fun, is my point.
Vulcans do not have fun. Logical or not, Vulcans just don't do it.
Well, as Neelix points out, he won't call it fun, but he might still have fun.
Because they're all about control, aren't they? They have to do fun in a controlled way. It's not... what they call fun isn't necessarily what we'd call fun, so it's not like he doesn't have fun.
He plays Kalto.
I was going to say, his fun is Kalto or meditating.
Right, but he's really having fun.
Yeah.
He just won't call it fun. Right.
Yeah, he loves that, because, I mean, so much of what Vulcans think of as fun is based in intellectual challenge. And so that might look more like work to humans than fun, but it's fun to them.
There just has to be some Vulcan bakers, though. Someone's got to bake.
Someone's got to make the bread.
Baked goods on Vulcan.
Someone's got to make the donuts.
With set squares. That's what I'm saying.
That's what I'm saying. There's a logical component to these things.
Yeah.
I would like to try a Vulcan donut.
That's always a thing, because so many cultures that we see in Star Trek are very one-dimensional, and obviously they're going to have people to do all of the roles that are required to make a society function, but we don't necessarily see that.
I want to meet the Vulcan butchers and bakers and candlestick makers.
Well, there won't be any butchers because Vulcans are vegetarian.
That's true. Anyway.
So when there's a Vulcan wedding, what do you think the wedding cake looks like?
Very, very precise. It probably looks like a Calto.
It's a Calto cake.
Yeah, it's like chocolate's fingers, and it's just like
I'm guessing that would be the groom's cake, because you know there's the wedding cake and then the groom's cake. The Calto cake would definitely be the groom's cake.
Is that a thing you guys have?
It's a southern thing. We don't
have that. Oh, okay.
I think it's a thing.
It's not a thing we have. But Riddles is great. I love Riddles. It's great to see characters that don't get a lot of an airing getting some focus.
Just like it's fun to see a different version of Harry Kim, we get to see a different version of Tuvok here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's always great to see Neelix in this caring role that we know that he can do. It's always brilliant when we get to see him given something a bit more serious to do.
Neelix even gets to mock Tuvok a little bit.
But in a loving way and in a caring way.
Oh, sure. No, he's not being mean, but he gets to, you know, intonate Tuvok's voice.
But he's done that a few times.
Neelix is always mocking Tuvok.
Mr. Vulcan. I love that he never stops calling him Mr. Vulcan, and that's like a throwback to the pilot. I know. It's just beautiful. It's like one of those beautiful little things.
Yeah, it's beautiful to me in the same way that Harry Kim calls B'Elanna Maki and she calls him Starfleet.
Starfleet.
I love that.
Yeah.
Speaking of, did anyone notice during this past week's Discovery, Burnham called Ash Starfleet? I was like, what? Where'd that come from?
Yeah, she did.
I was like, what? It just blew my mind. I was like, wait a minute. This is totally B'Elanna saying that, not Michael Burnham.
Yeah. It's a nice little reference, though. They just keep smattering so many out there, don't they? Okay, so that was
season 6. Moving on to number 7. Okay, number 7. What you got? What you got?
I'm going to get in there before you do. Shattered.
Damn it.
Me too. I've got
you
Shattered.
You knew my
on
Captain
my list
Obvious
too.
Hat was on because Shattered is, yeah, it's my jam.
Shattered is one of my favorite episodes from the whole of Voyager, not just
love,
season
love,
7.
Love, 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 Shattered.
Yeah, and I watched it again today and I still just love it. Like, I think I love it even more every time I watch it.
Oh, yeah.
I think I love it for the same reason. You get to see the whole of Voyager compressed into a single episode.
It's the clip show.
It is a clip show, yes.
But done in the best way ever. And you just get so much awesome Chakotay and so much awesome Janeway and Chakotay.
And the return of the macrovirus.
Actually, it's a clip show / Captain Janeway, this is your life.
That is true, yeah. I just love how it's all played out and how we get all these different throwbacks, mm-hmm. but there's new stuff in there as well, and we get the weird science that causes it all, and everybody gets a little moment, but it's at its heart, it's a Chakotay-focused episode, and then obviously we get the Janeway stuff as well, and it's just so incredibly awesome to watch. They just pack everything into it. It's like, oh, I love it.
Come on, plus Seska!
Yeah.
The return of Seska.
Yep.
Because she left us way too soon.
Yeah, she's ace in this episode.
I could have had her for a few more seasons. Just, you know, keep trudging along and trying to catch up with Voyager and
hanging around, being an antagonist, yeah. But yeah, it's just so great to throw back and be reminded of all these different things that have happened, but in a fresh way.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a new version of everything that we've already seen.
Watching Captain Janeway trust Chakotay almost immediately again.
Well, Captain Janeway makes a really interesting point that Voyager, you know, from the objective standpoint, you know, she gets to see all of these events on Voyager that are really terrible. She gets to see people die and this crisis after that crisis and macroviruses, and it looks like a terrible future to be in. She doesn't want to be anywhere near it. And Chakotay has to say, you know, you're not really seeing the whole picture. There are these amazing things that happen too, and we become a family, and he's got to really help her understand mm-hmm. what Voyager means and will come to mean to her.
There's so much to talk about in this episode. I could probably talk about this episode for like an hour quite easily, or two, or five.
Ten.
But I just love how they go on this journey together and how he shows her everything and, like, all the little bits that we get and, like, him talking about the fact that she lent him the book and him knowing about her dog and all those little bits. And then obviously their little exchange at the end where she's like, so how close did we actually get?
Well, let's see. You lent him the book that your fiancé gave to you.
That you never lent to anyone.
Yeah.
Subtle, yeah.
And then the little scene at the end is so beautiful as well when they're all back and he's like, I couldn't tell you, Temporal Prime Directive. And they're sort of, there's just this gorgeous little exchange between
them. Oh, yeah. Them. Well, go grab some more Antarian cider from the cargo bay.
Yeah. How do you know I keep it there? Couldn't tell you. Temporal Prime Directive.
For not having known each other very long in this timeline, they get pretty flirty pretty quick.
Oh, yeah.
Extremely flirty very quick, yes.
Well, I think because she knows herself, so she knows that she wouldn't have told him the stuff that she's told him without there being a close relationship there. So mm-hmm. She kind of gets the sense. But I love it when she says to him, oh, you're a soldier and a philosopher. Your intelligence file doesn't do you credit. I love that.
No, she went back to her own timeline immediately and went to the holodeck and said, call up a hologram of Chakotay. But make him a little taller. Give him a little more facial hair.
She didn't, because she didn't remember any of it.
Oh, yeah, the reset button. Darn reset button.
Well, it would have kind of broken everything that happened in the future otherwise, wouldn't it? Could you imagine her then going forward remembering all of that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, macrovirus coming up. Let's avoid this.
Yeah.
You know, I was just kind of yanking your chain, Suzanne, with the Michael Sullivan.
I know you were.
Like I said, I could talk for ages about Shattered, but there's just so much to like in there.
I honestly have a hard time coming up with a season 7 episode because a lot of my favorite episodes from season 7 do involve the Doctor in 7. Yeah. One of my favorites, though, and it's not really because it's a great episode, but I like what happens in the episode. I like Homestead when Neelix ends up leaving Voyager.
No.
I like the ending bit.
I think he has an incredibly difficult choice to make, and he ends up making a very hard choice to leave his Voyager family for the sake of his own happiness elsewhere. And this new life he's going to start. And that's a really hard thing to face. And I like that Neelix has to face it. And it's a great episode.
But did he possibly leave because they were Talaxians? And in a couple of years, he's going to need another lung? Because his Ocampan lung is going to give out because they only last so long.
Yeah, that's true.
So this is a large lung donor pool, is what you're saying.
Exactly. He's like, there's a lot of lungs here for me to choose from.
Yeah.
It's like, got that lung thing taken care of now.
Well, Ocampan, you know, they only live so long.
7 or 9 years or whatever.
So therefore, you know, their organs are going to give out.
His lung's going to die in 7 years.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's going to need something. And the Vidians aren't there anymore.
It's totally legit. I love this episode most for the fact that the ending part of it is the closest we get to a proper Voyager ending.
Yes.
Because when he gets his little send-off at the end, like, he gets the best send-off out of all of them, but I just love that whole little scene where he's walking through the corridor and
everyone
says
there.
Goodbye to him and stuff. Mm. Yeah.
And Tuvok dances.
Tuvok.
Yeah.
Oh. That is like a more of a Voyager proper ending for me than anything we get in Endgame, so I like it for that. I don't like the fact that Neelix left and didn't come back to Earth with them, but I like it
no
for that.
Because it was so close to the ending and he was, you know, he was in it for the long haul. Why leave right before they get home?
I'm still a little hung up on this Talaxian organ donors thing.
Why am I not surprised?
You know it's true. You know that's why he stayed.
Come for the Leola root, stay for the lungs.
Maybe he gets an iron lung.
Isn't that kind of what he had with the holographic ones?
Sort of, yeah, but he can move even less, I think, than in an iron lung, because at least in an iron lung, you're like in it.
That is Voyager's contribution to 24th century medical science right there. Holographic lungs. Why can't they pull that trick with other organs? Why can't you have a holographic heart or a holographic
Well, he couldn't
fill
move,
in the blank,
could he?
Right?
Yeah, no, he was stuck there.
What if you bring the mobile emitter into the picture?
That was before they had it.
I know, yeah. But after they
But what if you did that later? I don't know.
Right, could you walk around with your mobile emitter, with the holographic organ inside of you being projected by your mobile emitter.
I still don't think that's legit. I still think it's not going to function in the same way, is it?
No, because if it gets knocked off your arm, you're immediately dead.
Some organs are more replaceable than others.
Yes. Like, you know, the doctor can give you a pill and you grow a new kidney.
That is true. The doctor gave me a pill and I grew a new kidney.
Fully functional. Fully functional.
It's like that joke in Braveheart. Some men are longer than others. Some men are more holographic than others.
Oh, Lord. Oh, man.
No, I think that would be a cool thing, wouldn't it? If you just walk around with your holographic, whatever.
Your holographic.
Yeah, it would.
Whatever.
I'm still unconvinced as to the science of that, but...
Why are you unconvinced?
Because it's just a projection of light. It's not really a thing that functions, is it?
Like, it functions as well as anything else holographic. Lots of holographic things function.
Yeah, but like the doctor, he doesn't really have functioning organs and stuff, does he? He's just a projection of light.
No, but holographic pool cues and balls.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
I guess some biological processes could be replicated holographically and some couldn't, probably.
Maybe.
And the doctor has added those attributes to his program.
I'd require more exposition, is what I'm saying. I always like exposition, so.
I guess if the hologram is complicated enough, you could have all the same functional parts there that you can have a holographic car that works just like a regular car, right? Because all the holographic parts are there and they're arranged in the right way. And
like
they function
Tom's
in the right
Camaro
way,
so. Or Camaro.
Tom's Camaro works.
Camaro,
right?
Yeah.
The biomechanical parts of biology could be.
I guess. I don't know.
Okay, so I guess that leaves me. And I have to say that this is a holy time of awakening. Because I'm going with repression.
Yay. That is a stonking episode.
The return of the Maquis leather.
Woo-hoo. That's not the only reason.
Because you can't go wrong with Chakotay and leather. No, that's not the only reason. But it's a definite plus.
Yeah, this is a great episode. I think it kind of reflects some of what people wanted to see more of throughout Voyager, more of the Maquis conflict stuff, and it's nice that we get to see that come back.
Oh, yes, definitely. It should have happened a long time before, but
yeah,
I'll take what I can get.
But it's just so out of left field as well, like you're just not expecting it at all.
Yeah. And why wasn't Starfleet monitoring what was being sent to Voyager? How could Tiro just add this little program onto Tuvok's letter from his son? How is that possible?
Yeah, you'd think that wouldn't be possible, wouldn't you? But anyway, artistic license.
I like that they take a two-dimensional movie and watch it in a three-dimensional environment only to experience it as a two-dimensional image watched in 3D that we are watching at home on a two-dimensional screen. This is meta beyond meta beyond meta.
And he's gone meta again.
You really have gone meta now. My brain just failed completely during that. Sorry.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying, but there were way too many, like, inners in there.
Yeah, it's so weird.
You're missing the leather. There was no leather in the movie.
It's all about the leather.
It is all about the leather.
Priorities.
And the fan fiction, which is rife of this episode.
Oh, so much fan fiction.
Oh, I'm in my happy place.
Me too.
And that's when 3D movies still kind of suck. Like, why weren't they watching, like, Captain EO or something?
Oh my gosh, you went Captain EO. Wow. I actually saw that back in the day at Epcot. Oh, Michael, we miss you. So many memories. Thank you.
You know, there's some 24th century Michael Jackson fans who, like, put Michael Jackson on the holodeck and make him do the moonwalk.
I so want to be on that holodeck. I want to sing Black or White with Michael Jackson. That would be awesome.
Suzanne, this is not the holographic fantasy I would have guessed that you would have had, but okay.
What? Michael Jackson.
It's one of many.
Yes, I have a lot of holographic fantasies. No.
You don't have to have just
sometimes you just want to sing with Michael Jackson.
That's true. I'm kind of sad now that we were only allowed one pick from each series, or that's what we've done each season.
Well, let's do some honorable mentions.
Well, there's one more that I really, 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 really need to get in there from season 7.
Now's your chance.
Drive. We've got to mention Drive.
I do enjoy Drive. Yeah, I'm glad you thought to mention that. I skipped over that on my list.
Drive is awesome. First of all, I love the uniforms, which I think I've mentioned before.
Oh, okay. I don't like
them. Who doesn't? Yeah. No, really?
I think they're awesome. They're very flattering.
I would get, like, food and stuff on them because I'm constantly dropping food, and the white is not good.
I would get them dirty really fast, yeah.
Yeah, but it kind of looks like that kind of material where you can just wipe it off.
Well, that would be good.
Because it's like overalls, isn't it, rather than the normal material for the normal uniforms. So mm-hmm. I love the uniforms.
You're saying they're Stainmaster uniforms.
No, I'm just like, they're more like overall material, you know, where they just, like, you can get stuff on them, but it just wipes off, or they wash really easily.
Stainguard.
So I think it would be fine, yeah. So you can be like a sort of petrol head and not get oil over yourself. And then secondly, it's just such a fun episode. Like, I just really, I'm into motor racing, so I guess I like it for that reason. Nah. I just think it's fun that we get to have this race, and it suits Tom's character so beautifully.
How come they're not branded? How come they're not like NASCARs with the advertising stuck on them and the...
You had to go NASCAR.
I don't know. I don't know anything about racing. That's the only racing I know, NASCAR. That's a thing, right?
Yes. It is, unfortunately. Thing. Yes.
It's an American thing.
I was dragged to NASCAR races by my ex, and I mean dragged because...
I think they're fairly boring. They're just drive on ovals all the time instead of like interesting tracks.
And I always ended up sitting next to the shirtless, toothless man that was really sweaty, and it was just not pleasant for me.
I want NASCAR to be a little bit more like roller derby. Put it in a figure eight and let the cars dodge each other.
Roller derby, that would be cool. I like this.
Yeah. Motor derby, yeah.
But the track that they have in Voyager in Drive is much more interesting than that, because they have to fly through like all kinds of exciting obstacles and all the rest of it. So it's cool. I like it for that reason. I think it's fun. It suits Tom, like, down to the ground, because you could totally believe him being in, like, a race. And then, of course, we get all the Tom and B'Elanna, like, stuff. And it's gorgeous. It's just lovely.
I love that Tom just can't believe that Captain Janeway thinks it's a good idea.
It is surprising.
Yeah, which he would think that.
They were doing a hardcore sell job on this idea of a race, and she was totally on board.
That sounds good.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
It's her and her Federation obsession again, isn't it? She's like, oh, look at all these people we can cooperate with. I can hardly resist.
We can make friends.
She's such a proselyte.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just a fun episode with some really nice Tom and B'Elanna emotional stuff in, and the uniforms are cool. So there you go. That's why I like Drive.
Okay. Any honorable mentions from you, Zach?
You know, I could probably throw Q2 on the list.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'd have to stretch a little bit to put it on the list, but while we're stretching, I'll put it on the list.
It's a good rounding out of the Q arc.
Yeah, well, it is, isn't it? Yeah. And I mean, the kid is so annoying, but then...
Yes, I think that's what I like about it the most. You just want to smack the heck out of him.
But then he has to be, because it's in his DNA. He has to be annoying.
And I have to say, I absolutely love the fact that they cast John DeLancey's actual son to play his
son. I know, that was perfect.
I thought that was fab.
I just get a kick every time he says Aunt Kathy. I just die laughing.
It is funny. Q is great. So yeah, I do like that episode. It is a good one. I don't necessarily think it's the best out of the Q episodes.
No. It's just a fun episode.
It's good. It's a good way to end Q on Voyager.
Yes, definitely. Well, to round out Q, because that's the last we see of him, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's a good Icheb episode.
In the show, that is.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, in the show, yeah.
Books.
You guys.
It's just hashtag books.
Hashtag books.
Hashtag read the book, Zach.
Yes.
Exactly.
Totally be a thing.
Okay, well, my honorable mention is going to go to Muse, because even people on other planets... Yes. Ship Janeway and Chakotay.
To be fair, this is going to sound really bad, but that is the only thing I remember from this episode.
Again, I feel like I sound like a broken record here, but I like that episode for the same reason. It's fun to see another culture's take on the meaningfulness of Voyager and how to incorporate that into their own culture. And that's totally in line with what I liked about Blink of an Eye and so on. But good pick. I love it. I do like that episode a lot. It's not interesting, really, per se.
No, just seeing another culture's reaction and incorporating it into their little stories.
It's inherently interesting because of that. It's not a great episode, but it's,
and then B'Elanna freaking out because Janeway and Chakotay wouldn't kiss. How does she know? Is she in Janeway's quarters? Does she have a camera set up? I think they kiss.
Author's license. Yeah.
Well, it's been fun not talking about the Doctor and Seven today, but these aren't the only things we've not been talking about here on the network. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Earl Grey.
Yeah, Data's role is really interesting, and actually, one of the things I really like about this episode is the humor in it. There's some really funny stuff, like when Data is basically the judge in this contract dispute, things happen like Ardra makes Picard disappear, and he says, the advocate will refrain from making her opponent disappear, which is hilarious and not the kind of thing you usually see in courtroom dramas like this. So,
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
See, I would love that. I would love to have a scene where Voke and Tyler meet. Like, and I would be just fine with that. I don't need this to be the thing. And honestly, like when I watched Choose Your Pain the first time, I watched the episode. I didn't think for a second he would have been Voke. I didn't think of that at all.
Mm-hmm. Warp 5.
And he like scratches his nose under his suit. It's like, yeah, that doesn't look like that would help you from anything, you know, except for the rain. You keep rain off of you or something.
Well, you also just look at this side of paradise, right, for the original series. Anytime any of our major characters get, like, sprayed in the face with something, it doesn't turn out right. Well. Right? So, you know.
That's right.
The 602 Club.
When we're talking about the idea of context and history, I think this is the biggest issue that I see in this film. And with the Force Awakens too, and you put them together because they're going to make a trilogy, is look, writing 101, if you don't know the past and the future of your characters, you absolutely 100% cannot write their present.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or on the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. Also, please leave us a star rating and written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link. Also, remember, we're currently running a contest. Leave us an iTunes review, and you could win a Voyager DVD box set that has been donated by Ju Kim.
Well, we'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are lots of different ways for you to send them to us. The best place to join in the larger conversation is in the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose Message to a Trek FM Show and select To the Journey. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at Trek FM and on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. So, Zach, when you're not dressing up in your wipe clean suit and going for a race, where can our listeners find you?
Well, you can find me elsewhere on Trek.fm as co-host of MetaTrek's Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy. You can always find me in the Babel Conference if you'd like to talk about Voyager with me over there. And you can follow me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, at Zachary Fruhling. That's Zachary, Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y, Fruhling, F-R-U-H-L-I-N-G. And Suzanne, when you're not crossing the River Styx on the Barge of the Dead, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around the Trek FM network?
Well, you can find me popping up every now and again on the Babel Conference. You can also find me on Twitter. My handle is KJaneway8. And Kay, when you're not joining Chakotay on a Voyager Through the Years montage, where can our listeners find you?
That would be fun. I really want to do that. When I'm not doing that, you can find me in the Babel Conference. And if you want to look me up on Twitter, my handle there is ChocoWeeble.
Well, if you would like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, we invite you to become a patron of Trek FM on Patreon. Just visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and many more, all available through our special patrons website, The Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of time and money to produce, host, and distribute these podcasts each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us, and we hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
Well, we have some people that we'd like to thank. C. Brian Jones, the founder and publisher of Trek FM, and Captain Janeway's intellectual equal. Our executive producers, Matthew Rushing and Ken Tripp. Aaron Harvey, our art director. Richard Marquez, our production manager. And Brandon Shea Metalla, our Patreon manager. And we always want to give a really big shout out to our associate producers, Bruce Lish, Ju Kim, Richard Marquez, Patrick Carlin, and Norman Lau. Thank you so much for your support of Trek FM and of To The Journey.
Join us next time when we will be exploring Vulcan and searching out the butchers, bakers, and candlestick makers. But until then, this has been To The Journey.